Hello, and welcome to the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Streffler. I've been a teacher for the past 8 years, 6 years as an English teacher of 7th and 9th grade, and currently finishing my second year as an instructional technology coach and now curriculum resource teacher. I pride myself on being alternatively certified, with my bachelor's in business administration with a specialization in entrepreneurship, and only later coming into education. I feel this background gives me insight in some of the issues of education, as well as the larger implications beyond the K-12 environment. Further, this experience has given me the opportunity to now teach the same courses that provided me the position, and in this capacity, I found my love for teaching adults. But in the last couple of years, I have found that more than anything is that I love talking about education. From the mundane details of the daily life of teachers to the big issues facing education, I love this profession. I love pedagogy, and I love talking about all of it. The conversations I have with people have given me a drive to do more, and so this podcast was born. This is the Planning Period Podcast. I do not claim to be the only education podcast out there. I certainly am not. There are a myriad, I really do love that word, of others to choose from, and they are all awesome. I would know because in the last 3 weeks alone, I've listened to about 60 hours of various education podcasts. So instead, I only hope to be different. And instead of focusing on big issues or a specific point or a specific argument, I want to make an education podcast that focuses around people. I'll be interviewing various persons connected with education, teachers, administrators, students, former students, parents, community members, subs, volunteers, PTSA parents, anyone connected to what we all do. And so I will let the rest speak for itself. I genuinely hope you enjoy the Planning Period Podcast. And I'm sitting here with Jay Svetko, one of the teachers at my school. And maybe just tell me a little bit about you. What do you teach? How long have you been teaching? That kind of stuff?
Been teaching 22 years. I teach social studies. Economics specifically is what I teach now. Been at a variety of schools throughout Central Florida, originally from Ohio. And moved down here for teaching opportunities. There are a lot more teaching jobs. So I came down here and got started right away at a middle school and then went to high school after that for the rest of my career.
Cool. Do you like teaching?
Absolutely. If I had to do all over again, 100%, there's nothing I would change in my career path whatsoever. You know, I considered a whole bunch of other things, but yeah, I enjoy coming to work every day. I wouldn't change a thing.
Cool. I like that. Well, first question I guess I kind of want to start with is what, as much as you may like education, I think we can all agree. And actually, I should say this, like, conversations you and I have had were one of the like major impetuses for me wanting to do this podcast, which is why I'm really glad you're going to be my first guest. Is, you know, I remember you came up to me one day in the parking lot. We were both on our way out of the door, and you came out to me in the parking lot and you said, you know, we were talking about something else, but you were like, people always say education is broken. Like, we say those words, education is broken. And then you looked at me and you said, but what does that actually mean? Like, what is broken? And I was like, I don't really know that I have a direct answer to the question. I think we ended up rambling in the parking lot for like another hour after that. And my first question for you is, what is the biggest problem facing education right now?
My opinion on that is, I've mentioned before, I don't see a clear-cut goal of education. What is the purpose of education? I always say this. I say you get what you emphasize, and if you emphasize everything, you don't get anything. And so we have to have some sort of focus. And it feels like we want to achieve everything with education. And some of those goals are just sort of conflicting. If you want to teach content and you're content driven and everything's going to be standards based, and we want to make sure that the kids learn all the economic content that I'm going to teach, then you may have to sacrifice some of the teaching them responsibility, and you may have to allow them to turn in later work, and you're not going to hold them accountable as much for those things because you have to focus on content. Some people will say that we think we need to produce productive citizens and teach them responsibilities and all those kind of things, and that might come at the cost of curriculum. You have to not let them turn in late work if you're going to teach that sort of responsibility. So I think we need some sort of clear-cut goals in what we want with education. That'd be what I think.
Okay. So I mean, I guess the logical extension of that question is, what do you think the goal should be?
If, I don't have an opinion, and let me explain that. You can do either of them. It doesn't matter. In my
opinion... When you say opinion, either of them, what do you think? You like, could sort focus of the two
more,
big classes.
Yeah, you could focus more on content. You can focus more on teaching good habits and things like that. Personally, I it doesn't really matter which one you do, in my opinion. You just need to have that goal. I had a thought. I don't remember what it was now. You can edit that, right?
Yeah, we can take stuff out. I'm probably not going to. I just like the idea of having audio of you going, you can just take that out, right? Oh, yeah. Totally going to do that. Totally going to.
You just keep telling me you'll take it out. I'll feel much better myself.
Exactly what it is, let's be honest.
Man, I had somewhere I was going to go with that. What was the original question?
Your opinion didn't matter. You said you, and you literally said, I don't have an opinion. You can go either way.
Right.
And then I got too sidetracked on what the goals were.
Boy, I had a great thought. I don't know where I was going to go with it.
Story of every teacher's life, right?
Exactly.
Like you had a direction and you lost it.
The primary goal of education needs to be focused on creating students and creating people that are going to be, you know, the buzzword is always lifelong learners and productive citizens. And I think that's where we need to go with education, but I think we're way too caught up into curriculum. Everybody says, oh, it's so important that my kids remember the shifters of demand. And that's irrelevant. I've always said that, like, if there was an American history teacher that said, you know what, I don't want to teach the Civil War. I hate the Civil War. I'm not even going to teach it. Most people would be like, that's an important part that needs to be taught. But I would rather that teacher go, you know what, I love the Nixon era, and I'm going to spend twice as much time on that. And I want my own daughter to come home from school tired. I want her to go, man, I've thought so much today. I don't care what the content was. You know, if a kid can read, which I think is the most important thing in school, if a kid can read, then they can go learn all that stuff on them by themselves if they want to. But we have to make sure that we teach kids how to learn and teach them how to get through those kind of things and teach that sort of thing. And I think we're a little too focused on curriculum. And then you always hear the buzzwords teaching to the test, you know, which is what I do. I teach to the test. I have all kinds of questions and drill them really hard for that sort of stuff. And they're learning material along the way. But I think I could do a better job if I wasn't confined by the test. So I think that's a big part of it. And I do think there's an element that really needs to be, we need to focus on how productive they're going to be. Are they going to show up to work on time and things like that? So we need to kind of teach responsibility. I think a lot of students now feel that, you know, they should be given a whole bunch of chances at things. And if their attendance is bad, it should be forgiven. And there's a lot of those kind of things where we're not really producing hard workers, you know? So I think that all comes really at the extent of content, that we're really being content driven to the test, you know what I mean? And that's specific, instead of letting teachers teach what they want to teach. You know, I had a friend that taught at a private school, and he was telling me that they were doing, it was an elementary school, and they decided to do, we were talking about the differences between public and private education. And he says, you know, I have no curriculum. And I'm like, wow, that's awesome. And he's like, well, it is and it isn't. He goes, you know, cause I don't know what I'm going to do from day to day. But at the same time, he was currently doing a lesson with students in California where they're corresponding back and forth about GMOs. And that's in no curriculum, but still he found that interesting. The kids found it interesting and they spun it off and they started doing that sort of thing. So he's making them work. He's making them learn. He's teaching them how to learn, but he's not confined by what exact content has to be taught.
Okay. The idea of throwing out curriculum and you know, going to a more free-form educational system is not completely unique. One of the problems I always see with that idea, and I love the idea in general, I think you're right in the sense of letting us open up what we want to teach our kids. And a lot of times when I have these discussions with people, especially when you start talking about grading, it's always the thing that comes up when you talk about grading. Don't give a kid a zero because it double hurts them, you know, gives them a double F. But then they're like, well, but then you're giving them 50 points. And it's like, well, you're not. They still have an F. But they're always like, well, that's not the real world connection. That's not how real world works. And that's not, you know, how do we do that if we're testing and we have the test and standardized tests and blah, 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 blah. But I think my follow-up to that is, if we throw out curriculum, if we give or minimize curriculum,
right,
or reduce,
yeah,
or some variation thereon, is there a need for us to have a system to measure our teachers on? And then if so, what does that system look like if we eliminate or minimize curriculum?
I don't think you can. I think it's unmeasurable. I really do. I don't think you can measure learning. I just, It's subjective. It's holistic. It's not, you just, you know, what one kid does on a test and another kid does on a test, that doesn't show that the one student A is learned more of the material because of how they scored on the test. I wish there was. I know everybody wants there to be a way to have accountability and measurability, but I don't know. I don't know that you can do that. It just, you know, we try to quantify everything and it's a more of a subjective thing. I don't know how to do that. Wish I had an answer.
But at the same time, and I mean, I'm a little bit of devil's advocate here.
Sure, yeah, sorry, I love it.
I feel like at the same time, you can walk into a classroom or anyone, you know, anyone in education, at least with experience, can walk into a classroom and go, this is a good teacher, this is a bad teacher, you know, maybe somewhere in between or variations in the phenomenal teacher and awful teacher. But,
right.
You know, even with just in the ranges, like we can walk in a classroom and within 5 or 10 minutes, I can look around and say, okay, this is a place where learning is happening.
Right.
So my assumption is always, if I can do that in my head, there should be a way. My brain is measuring it somehow.
Right.
How am I measuring that? I guess there's some level of how are you measuring it.
When it comes to, let's do grade. I'll give you this example. When it comes to grading, you know, you got kids that have a 72 and a 65 and a 94 and all that stuff. And that's great. You know, that means that they got 94% right or 72% right. But the bottom line is, I'm a professional educator. And the same thing, I can look at a kid and go, he got a 60, but he's not a D kid. I can look at that as a professional. I can assess that subjectively. And I can, the same way you walk into my classroom and you can see if good teaching is going on, I can look at a kid and see if there's good learning going on. But I don't know that the grades accurately represent what a student's learning. And I don't think that an evaluation system is going to do the same for a teacher. You know, I mean, I can't remember what Supreme Court justice it was, but, you know, when they had a big pornography issue that went to the Supreme Court, he said, you know, I can't define pornography, but I know it when I see it. It's just one of those things that it does require. There's nothing wrong with going with some subjectivity. Is it good or not? We are so wrapped up into measuring everything. I understand it. It'd be nice to be able to do that. I just don't think some things are.
I think that's fair. And I'm really glad that my first podcast episode, we've already nailed pornography.
Like, yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah.
Immediately referenced
exactly.
Pornography. So I feel good about that as well.
That's on the checklist, good. Isn't it?
Yeah, pornography. It was right. What's there. Right? Check. So. Nailed it. Awesome. We're going to make a bingo card, apparently. Podcast bingo.
Right, exactly. So the spinoff on this would be amazing. So go ahead.
No. Moving on. All right. Well, let's go to my next question. And let's, you know, I don't think we have an answer. You know, I don't think we have a solution.
What's yours? Let me talk about yours. I mean, you know, how would you measure it?
I agree with you in the sense that it is sort of subjective. I think what happens is we try to build systems that measure a specific kind of good teacher. And there are a lot of different kinds of great teachers out there. I know teachers at our school, for example, who will fail, you know, our county uses the Marzano evaluation model, and I know teachers at the school who would fail that model left and right,
right
if you were to really like look at it truthfully and the way the system's built and so on and so forth. And yet their pass rates on the AP exam they teach for or whatever else are the highest in the county or the state. Does that mean their pass rates could technically be higher if they followed the system that we've prescribed for them? Or does it mean that the system isn't describing or evaluating that teacher effectively? And I certainly lean towards the ineffective evaluation side. So I think maybe there needs to be a way to quantify and qualify the types of effective teaching and then judge a teacher based on the type of teaching they're trying to do. I feel like, you know, and it goes back to that kind of buzzword idea. You mentioned the word buzzword, but it goes back to that kind of buzzword idea. Like our evaluation system, you know, is basically built entirely around student-centered learning.
Correct.
Like it's entirely about students interacting with knowledge, me not hand-feeding them, but making them work to learn. And,
right.
No, you know, very non-lecture driven. And lecture has its place. And there's no acceptance for it in our evaluation system.
Right.
And now, the problem is that most people are not actually good at lecture. They do it in their way, and they're not really monitoring or giving feedback or any of those other things that go with it to really do an effective lecture system. But and maybe there just needs to be a way to be like, okay, well, I'm going to be a lecture teacher, so you're going to judge me on the lecture scale.
Right.
Or I'm going to be a centered-based teacher, centers, where I'm doing centers in my room every day,
right.
So you need to judge me on the centers scale. Or maybe there just needs to be a set of scales that a teacher could choose from to judge off of.
I don't know. I'm trying to imagine and me saying be, you know, free flowing with all your education, but I try to look at a lecture teacher and going, ugh, that's terrible. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I mean, is that really, I mean, how often are people lectured to? I mean, when is that ever really an ideal scenario to acquire knowledge? I agree with the student-centered stuff, and lecture does have its place, but how much? Having a different, I don't know. I try to think back to Socrates and Aristotle and Plato and can't imagine them fitting into any model where you go, check, they get a plus here and a minus here. You know what I mean? It's just kind of, again, I'm going with mine. I think it's subjective. I think evaluators need to be trusted in their professional opinion to go, that's good and that's not good.
I think the problem you inevitably run into with a system like that, though, is that bias. Somebody can argue. Like, well, but that's not, that's your opinion. That doesn't mean that I'm a bad teacher.
Yeah.
We do need some way to weed out bad teachers. I would actually argue that that's one of the biggest problems we have, at least in our county, is we have a complete and utter inability to get rid of teachers.
That's very true.
And that is a real issue.
That's very true.
There, I mean, borderline inability, but there are some very rare exceptions of extremes where you can fire somebody. But other than that, it is nearly impossible to eliminate someone.
Very true.
And it is frustrating to continually watch someone who's not doing good for kids stay in this profession year after year after year, and there's no way to adjust that. There's no real weight behind that hammer.
Right.
And that's frustrating. There's threat, but there's no real weight behind the hammer. And I think that's probably true in a lot of counties and states and everything else too. And, you know, and again, because you can argue subjectivity of evaluation, because there's no way to say, well, who a great teacher is or whatever else. So,
but I mean, let's spin this another way. Let's say, okay, so tenure is an issue we're talking about. If you got rid of tenure and there was more freedom to remove teachers that are not effective, would you end up with a situation where Principal A attracts these types of teachers, Principal B attracts these types of teachers? I don't fit at school A because, you know, my administrator doesn't think what I'm doing is effective, but it might be great at school B. And if you can't find a job at school A, B, C, D, E, or F, you might not be a very good school. But if you find, if you don't fit in at A, maybe you go to school C and that style.
Don't we kind of have that now, though? I mean, at least in terms of what leadership style you work under, there's definitely, you see it every time a principal leaves a school, he flocks his teachers with him.
Sure, yeah.
You know, so I mean, we kind of have some level of that now where I know principals in the county who I think are wonderful principals, but I could never work for them.
Right, right.
It's not a slight against them. It's just their style of leadership doesn't match with my style of work. And I think that's true in a lot of businesses, too. So I don't think that's like a, that wouldn't be a school unique phenomena.
Right.
So I think that's true anywhere. And you talk about tenure. I don't even think tenure is the issue. We have just a harder time getting rid of a new teacher that doesn't, I'll never get tenure. I didn't make it. I didn't make the cut. Like, I'll never get tenure in this county. But I also am fairly certain I could do nearly nothing for a very long time and I would never get fired for it. I might get moved to a different school, or I might get put into a different class, or I might lose my title and go to a different position, but I'm not going to get fired for doing nearly nothing.
All right. That's a good point.
So tenure's not, to me, what makes the difference, although it is the thing that's the talk about.
Right,
but
right.
I don't think it's what necessarily makes the difference.
Right. Well, there's another problem we haven't solved.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're good at this. Let's go to something a little better. All right. So we've got big issues, right? And I want to imagine like narrowing down, if we will. What is something you do in your classroom other teachers should be doing that maybe they just aren't? It could be in one of the new buzzwords. It can be just something you're really excited about. What is it that you wish other teachers would do?
A great one that came from Marzano. I'll start a little bit bigger and go smaller. Two things that I absolutely love about Marzano, the Marzano system. Number one, and this one people get angry about, is talking about learning goals. I think learning goals are great. I think, can't tell you how many students would go, you know, oh, what'd you learn today? Nothing. I'm like, oh my gosh. If you at least have one central focus thing that those kids are used to looking at and going, then they go, what'd you learn today? And they go, well, I learned that. You at least focuses them on something. So I really like that. But then more to your question, what I like from Marzano and that I've gotten, what's made me a better teacher, is the monitoring of students. That's a big component of Marzano's evaluation system. And it was something that I didn't do effectively, but I've gotten much, much better at. Being able to look at every single student's work or what they're doing or what their thoughts are, instead of just going, okay, does anybody know the answer to question two? And one kid raises his hand and gives the answer. And then there's, you know, 24 other kids that didn't understand it. You have to be able to monitor all the students, and you have to be able to monitor them pretty quickly so that you can adapt what you're doing with your lesson. Technology is a really big one for that. That's one wave in education that we're moving to that really, really assists with that.
You know, I agree with you in the sense of monitoring. I think it's something that people still don't actually understand in terms of the Marzano system. I don't think they actually get monitoring and what it really means.
Right.
And you're right, and it's one of the things that I do love about your room is you are monitoring constantly. There is a constant monitoring going on in your classroom. And I think you're right. Like, if we could just get people to understand that subjective, anecdotal, like, well, I know that this kid and this kid and this kid learned, that's great, but it also isn't always right. There's so many biases right. and beliefs and everything else that can make their way into that thought process, and you'll be amazed at what your kids may actually know or not know. What is one strategy you use for monitoring that you think is, you know, you mentioned technology, but, or it could be a non-technology, but what is one strategy for monitoring that you use?
The quickest one is we have Land School, so I can watch what they're typing on their screens as they're doing it. And the one really good thing about that is, so I can see all the computer screens at the same time. So as they're doing something, I can do that. And the advantage of that is, even before that, if you just walk around, and it was before computers and people were using paper, you can only look at one at a time and you got to walk through the whole room. This one, you can see them all at the same time and kind of track them. That's a really good one. Again, with technology, the kids, they'll have their notebooks, but they all have them electronically, and I have access to all of them. So whatever they put in there, I can watch what they're doing and as they're typing it, and I can see it even if, like, it's after school, I have access to their notebooks and what they've done, so I can monitor that. And then we'll do, like, little mini assessments. And again, back to technology, which really helps in this area, there's all kinds of different ways that kids will do a quick little survey or a quick little quiz, and then you can see and you can look, you're like, oh my gosh, you know, 82% of the kids missed this question, we need to redo that somehow, or a whole bunch of kids have this right, I can move on, I don't have to do as much with that. So those, and that one right now I'm using Edmodo for that, for most of that, to track that, but there are other tools for that as well.
You know, can you tell me, you kind of touched on it, but you were talking to me before we started recording about what your review looks like going on right now. Can you just sort of talk about that? Like, that's just such a simple concept, but I feel like so many people wouldn't do that or don't do it in that way.
So every day when they come in, they have a little quiz, a Bellwork quiz that they take. I do it on the screen. I could give them the quiz, but I want them to actually type out the questions and the answers just for a little bit more, that they're thinking of it. And, you know, the idea that writing it, putting it down somewhere helps stick. So, and it's from the previous day's lesson. And then usually a couple lead in questions to kind of hook them for the day's topic. So they come in and they take those, and then we immediately go over those and we review those and see what they got right and what they didn't get right and stuff like that. That's always going to preview what the day was before. So.
Okay. And again, I say this, but I've been in your room a ton of times. Jay is always one of the people that when I have someone coming to visit our school to look at technology and how we do one-to-one, which when you have a school as large as ours, people seem to want to see what we do here. And, you know, Jay is always one of the first people on my list to reach out to. So I feel like I can come up with like 15 different things you do that we could talk about. You know, I also know you're reviewing for the AP exam, right? Like, right. You're getting ready for that. I actually wanted to come visit your room, probably still will, but wanted to visit your room on Thursday. I like what you're doing on Thursday with quiz and then review and then group quiz. Can you just explain that a little bit? This is just such
a cool... So we're reviewing for final exams. So I've broken it up into different units. And so they're going to come in over 4 days, and they come in and they take a quick quiz on their own. So it's usually about 20 questions, and they'll go through and they'll answer them as best they can. And so it's material that we've covered throughout the year, but it might be a little bit from earlier in the year. And so they might not have a great recollection as they should. So they'll go through and take that quiz. And then again, immediately the results come up, and I can look on the screen, and I can show the students too. And it shows, you know, question number three had 82% miss it, and question number six had 52% miss it. So you can see where the areas of need really are. And you can look, and it's really, really surprising, because sometimes you're like, man, they all got that question right. I mean, that's amazing. And you know that you don't even have to spend any time on it. You can just, you're done. But then you can see the areas of need. So once they take that quiz, you look at that, and then I give a quick little 5, maybe 10 minutes at most, where I review the things that they've missed. And I can see the content that they need brushed up on, so we do that. Once we go over that review, then the third phase happens. They'll take the exact same quiz again, only this time they work in groups. And so now they can share their thoughts and their answers, and you'll, it's neat because you'll walk around and you'll listen, like, oh, remember, he just said this, and then they get that answer. And so they're working together to get those answers to prepare for the final exam.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I love how they're just like, they're constantly reviewing previous material, and they're, then you have them working independently, and then it's a whole group, and then like, you're almost like a I do, we do, you do kind of, like,
right, yeah,
like,
yeah.
A you, I've kind, it's of like you do, I do, we do.
I've just mixed flow. Them up a little, yeah, bit, right? It gives them a little different order.
So, and I love that. And I don't know, maybe that in some ways, maybe that comes back to that whole, like, how do you evaluate somebody? Is there so much of improvisation in education, in teaching? There's so much, okay, that's a cool idea, but let's remix it, or let's One of the big buzzwords in education right now is hacking. It's not actually hacking. They don't mean any kind of actual computer, but like hacking the tricks to this. Like it's that big thing. And yeah. I think a lot of that is like, okay, you know, I do, you do, we do, you know, I do, we do, you do. That's great. Let's maybe just invert the order or let's switch this thing to the middle. And right. like, you know, it's that trial and error and improvisation that I think is so awesome.
That's why I always like think, pair, share. Because again, it's repetition. It's not just giving it to students once and then expecting them to know it. It's giving it to them and then giving it to them again and then flipping it around and giving it to them one more time. And some students get it once and some take two times, some take three times, and just and different methods and methodologies to do that. So it's another example of just redoing things over and over again.
You know, when I came up to greet you, and we had we were hanging out with some other teachers in another room, so we were having some conversations ahead of time, and I wish I'd recorded all that because there was just so much good stuff in there. So. There was like great stuff going on, but let me ask you this one. Let's go to my third big question here. And that is, who is your favorite teacher? Like, who is the teacher that maybe you model off of or that had the biggest impact on you?
Not model after, but biggest impact. So and we'll talk about why. My government teacher when I was in high school, he was a minor rock star at the school just for being quite unique. And a lot of stories you could tell about him. But so I went in there for government class, and it was current government. So it was all current events. So we walk in, and the first day, he's got notes written all over the board. Now, this is 100 years ago, so, you know, we're using chalkboards and no technology or anything like that. So there's notes written all over. He's got the front and the sideboard filled up. And so we come into class, and we're talking and talking and talking. And it was kind of an honors class, so we still have, you know, we're concerned about our grades. And one student raised her hand. He goes, you know, Mr. Mason, do we need to copy down these notes? And he was reading the newspaper. He folds over the end of his newspaper, looks at us, folds that back end over, and didn't say a word to us. So we're smart enough, like, oh, we got to take the notes. We copy all the notes down and then talk the rest of the class. Day two, the exact same thing. Not as many notes, it's a little shorter, but so we copy the notes and we don't say anything. He didn't say a word to us the first 2 days. Third day, we come in, exact same thing. So we copy the notes, we're talking, having a good time. We got the notes. It's about 2 minutes before the bell rings. He folds that newspaper over again and he goes, quiz tomorrow. Those were the first and only words that he said to us over 3 days. And we're like, oh, great. You know, we'll study the notes. We're going to ace this test. Love this class. So, you know, I go home and I study and it says, you know, today the PLO attacked Israel or whatever the case was. And so I'm ready for my test. And the question was, who's the PLO? I'm like, that wasn't in the notes. I'm like, so we all failed the test. Well, the next day we came in and there's notes all over the board. But now all of a sudden we're like, who's the PLO? Why are they attacking? And we start asking all these questions, trying to figure out what he's going to ask us. And so the dynamic of the class entirely changed. But so, you know, very unique approach to how he motivated people to get the work done, that he wasn't going to give it to you. He wasn't going to spoon feed it to you. He'll answer any question you have, but it's up to you to figure out what the questions were. So I thought that was really neat. And you know, it made me feel smart. It made me feel like I was thinking, okay, what's he going to ask? How am I going to do? What do I have to know? And when that happened, that comes down to the thing that, you know, these students aren't going to remember what you taught them. They're going to remember how you made them feel. And if you make them feel smart, if you make them feel successful, and if you make them feel like they can conquer the world, then they're going to go out and do it. And again, it comes back to where we started from. I'm not as big on content. If I forget to teach about a section of the content, that's okay. If I make my kids work and I make them think and I make them exercise their brains and I make them leave feeling that they're smarter and I make them leave feeling that they can do things and accomplish things, absolutely. My last lesson before we started reviewing for the final was about investing. And so we show all the time value of money and the fact that, you know, here's how you can make $1 million by the time you retire with only a dollar for every hour that you work. And at the end, I got kids coming up to me going, what's that website? How do I do this? I'm going to do this. You know, I'm going to be the one that's a millionaire, coach. And I'm going to come back and tell you. That's going to stick with them. And they might not remember the methods for investing that we went over, but they remember that they want to invest. It made them feel like they want to make money.
It's funny to me, actually, in a lot of ways that you say, like, he's your favorite, but you don't necessarily model.
I don't do anything he does, right?
But at the same time, like, to me, that sounds like an early interpretation of student-centered learning, though.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, to me, that's like, make the student learn for themselves. He taught you critical thinking skills,
right,
know, so in a way that would never fly now. Right. But the concept, the theory behind it is still valid, right? I mean, that part of it's still...
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah. So that's just so cool. I kind of want to just do that next year with my kids. Like, again, I kind of want to just be like, punch a notes on the board, not say a word.
But how do you... And let's go back to the evaluation thing. He'd do terrible on almost any evaluation. For 3 days, he didn't say anything. I mean, you know, what kind of evaluation do you give this guy?
So, and yet that's your lifelong learned, like your lifelong favorite teacher. And,
right, absolutely.
I agree. It's funny because I'm the same way. Every time I think about who's my favorite teacher or I ask somebody else, like I always have an image in my head of this teacher, Mr. Boyd, who was my senior English literature and comp teacher, AP Lit and comp teacher. And I don't know that he directly taught us absolutely anything about literature the entire year. I don't think any of it was there. Basically, in terms of content, the only thing I remember is we had to memorize the intro of Beowulf in Old English. And right. I remember what Way Gardania and Yerdegom. Like, that's the extent of what I remember of that. I don't remember anything else. But in terms of content, that's what I remember. But what I remember is this thing we would do where, and I was in a, we had a 4x period schedule. So we only had 4 classes a day for 2 hours each or whatever. And they were, you do an entire year in a semester.
Right.
And so with a lot of these, like a lot of the AP courses in my school, like it was the same kids in the same class. So we'd spend like 3/4 of our day together, the same like 20 kids. So we all knew each other, goofed off all the time. And it was a good group of kids. And so we would get into his class and it was like so free-formed and ridiculous. It was like free-form jazz education. Like it was literally, it was just like he would sit up in the front of the room at a chair. His desk was in the back. He wasn't at his desk. He would just sit at a stool or something like that in the front of the room. He would cross his arms in front of his tweed jacket and he would just sit. And somebody would throw a question at him. And it never had to do with content.
Right.
But it became this game where we would do everything in our power to come up with a topic that he somehow knew less about than we did.
Right.
And it was never literature because we were like, he must know more about literature than us. He's a literature teacher.
Right.
We would just come up with whatever. And this dude had the most extensive knowledge of all things in the world. Precious gemstones.
Right.
Expensive watches.
Right.
Like, I mean, he was all over the place. Music, history. He was everywhere.
Right.
And he always could sit there and drive the discussion. And in retrospect, in a lot of ways, I do try to emulate that, you know, in with my classroom where I try to be an expert in content and let my kids push me in 1,000 different directions. And I realized later on, it wasn't until much later on, that it wasn't that he knew everything.
Right.
It was that he had the critical thinking skills to be able to run that discussion.
Right.
And it's like, but at the same time, it was a constant for me. It was like, oh my God, I want to be that smart. Oh my God, I want to know that. Oh my God, I want to do that thing. I want to be that guy. I want to like learn that. And so when I ended up back in education through my long path to get here, it was like, I'm teaching English. Like, there's no question in my head, I'm teaching English.
Right.
And again, he would do terribly because he didn't monitor crap.
Right.
Like, he didn't monitor anything. He sat in the front of the room with his arms crossed. Like, that is what we tell people not to do every day. Right. And yet that is the teacher in my head that is the best teacher I ever had, at least one of them.
But both scenarios, yours and mine, are not centered around curriculum. They were centered around learning and wanting to learn. And I think for the most part, everybody wants to learn something. There's nobody on the planet that doesn't want to learn stuff. It's just, one, what do you want to learn and how do you engage that learning? Again, when you start going, you know, we're going to focus so much on curriculum, you focus less on learning. And both those scenarios and everybody's story is probably the same. Somehow it engaged them in learning and made it fun, made them enjoy what they were doing,
made them feel good. You know, I think what happens is we get, I don't think curriculum by nature eliminates learning.
I agree, right.
I don't think it does that. I think well-written standards should be open enough that a teacher has some freedom with how they teach that standard.
Right.
The standard is only the content. And we can still teach them those critical thinking skills centered around the content because, you know, ultimately you, in your example, learned what a PLO was and how come he did these things and all those things. And even in my example, I got a 5 on the AP Lit. So somehow he was teaching me something. I don't really remember how, but he was teaching us things.
Right.
I think in terms of that, there is learning happening. And I don't think standards necessarily negate. I think what happens is, as teachers, it's that constant battle of time and pressure and stress and evaluations and waiting. And we just fall into, well, I have to teach them this standard. Right. I have to teach them this. And I think teachers on their own, or through external pressure as well. I mean, I don't mean, it's not a slight against the teacher, but I think the natural inclination is to fall into, here's the standard, learn it. Here's the standard, here's the learn it. Whereas maybe if we took some of that pressure off ourselves, then took that pressure off the kids, we could get them to standards without talking about standards.
That's, yeah, I agree. I agree. You know, when I say curriculum, I mean, there has to be some guidelines. I mean, we're going to teach economics. You know, we're going to teach American history. We're going to teach the subject matter. I agree. It just feels that, you know, I know personally, I'm like, I've got to cover this, and this, because I know they're probably going to ask it on the test. And it really takes away from some things. Like, I would like to do more with investing. My kids were passionate about that. And it's in the standard, but I can't spend as much time on it as I want because I have to cover some things that they're in the standards and they're probably going to be tested on, but maybe not quite as interesting or as important. And some, you know, kind of lose some students in some of that stuff too.
I think every subject suffers from that, though. Yeah. I mean, that's the problem. Problem and also necessity. I think if you had a class that had nothing there, then some stuff would never get taught.
You're right.
You know what I mean? So right. I guess you kind of have to have it. But at the same time, you're right. Could some of that, if you teach them the critical thinking skills and the understanding of how to learn with the stuff they enjoy, they can figure out the stuff they don't enjoy another way or right. get them to it somehow. I don't know.
Along with the enjoyment part, we'll spin this a little bit further if we can go. I think with a lot of online learning, I don't know what education is going to look like in 20 years. And I'm very excited to see what it's going to be like because there's a lot. Okay, another philosophy I have in mind. If a kid's bad in math, I don't think they should take math classes. I think that it's okay to quit. I think we have such a negative connotation to quitting that, you know, oh, never quit, keep working. But it's kind of a waste of resources. If you're really bad in math, you're probably not going to be an engineer, but you might be a great Nobel laureate somewhere. You might, you know, do journalists. So maybe take two reading classes. We need to go more with individualized instruction and what really is going to help and benefit the kid. And I think with technology, you can do that. And again, the same way, you could start getting more into in-depth in what they want to know. And the standards can be, again, a little bit more vague and a little bit more so we cover the basics and they can focus on what they want. Now, that being said, you can't have a nuclear engineering class at every high school, but if you do more online learning, which is where we're going to go, sure, there's going to be a nuclear engineer teacher in California and you can take his class online. So I think online learning is going to change the dynamic of education quite a bit.
Yeah, it's funny.
And you can cut that if it doesn't fit in with
questions. No, it does. No, I don't care. This is all right. Going to be – my plan is completely reformed. It's funny. I've done a ton of research on other podcasts in the last month or last 2 weeks, and I've listened to probably like 60 or 80 hours of education podcasts in the last week and a half or 2 weeks. And that's one of my takeaways every time I'm listening to one is they want to – some hosts really want to push it back to like a centralized topic.
Yeah.
And I don't have any desire to do that because that's not how real conversations work to me. Like I flow all over the place. Maybe it's just the ADD in me that does that. I don't know. Maybe only ADD people will follow my lesson. Like, and thankfully, I didn't get sidetracked by your chicken comment. So because chickens. There's no chickens in your room. Ag is it that way.
Right.
You know, you're right. The individualized learning is interesting. The online learning is so different too. Like I wonder, there's so much pro and con to online learning to me. Like, you know, there's kids that don't like it and there's kids that, you know, just can't do it and there's blah, 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 blah. And it's also to me, it's similar. And while we were talking earlier with some of the teachers, they said I just have so many kids that just say they don't like to read on the computer.
Right.
And there's a part of my brain that just says too bad.
Right.
Because that's the reality of the future. I'm sorry, but it is.
Right.
Like we are going to get to a point where that's what you have to do.
Right.
So maybe we need to force you to do it now. And I guess here's my thing. We need to force you to do it now when you're allowed to fail. And I think that touches on the point of all of this is that you have to let your kids know it's okay to fail.
Right.
And we don't do that right now.
Right.
You know, and I think maybe going all the way back to the beginning, maybe one of the biggest problems in education is that we don't actually believe it's okay to fail.
Right.
The teachers don't believe it. The administration doesn't believe it. The parents don't believe it. The kids don't believe it. No one thinks it's okay to fail.
Right.
I don't remember when I was in school, and you've been teaching a lot longer than me.
Thanks, man. You really had to point that out. Appreciate it.
I did. It's all right. You said you don't know what teaching's going to look like in 20 years. I almost pointed out you won't be able to see by then anyways, so it doesn't really matter.
These whippersnappers. Get off my lawn, Treffler.
I don't remember being so grade-driven, GPA-driven when I was in school. I definitely wasn't picking my courses based on what was going to look good in college.
Right.
I was picking courses based on what I wanted to do.
Right.
Maybe I was a unique situation where what I wanted to do was banned and there were options there. And so I was able to be in a trump, you know, I was able to have my trumpet in front of me half the day, literally, by the time I graduated. Maybe that was unique to me, but even still, I feel like people can find what they want to do and that should be the drive. I agree with you in some sense of if you're not good at math, don't take math. I stopped taking math when I went to college as much as possible.
Right.
I hate math.
Right.
It's not my thing. I always tell people I don't number good, but I word good. Like I word with the best of them. So I always love saying that to a group of teachers, by the way, because every English teacher in the room like cringes.
Nails on the chalkboard,
like,
right?
Like, you can't say word good, you mean word well. Wait, word isn't a verb? Exactly. You can't say that at all.
That's funny. That was exactly what I said. You mean word well. I'm like, word. I did the exact same thing in my head when you were doing that.
So I love funny. It. It's my favorite thing. So, but yeah, no, I think I agree with you. But you've been teaching. Tell me, I mean, do you feel – one of the things I feel like is that there's an over-reliance and over-dependence on grading. Mm-hmm. And that there's this like constant pressure for a kid to score well, do well, grade well, test well, SATs, GPA. Do you feel like that's a new phenomenon? Is it worse than it used to be?
Interesting question. I think for some it's worse, and for some it's even less important. I think we've gone to both extremes in there. Actually, I think there are some kids that they constantly worry about that, and they would sacrifice the learning for their GPA in a heartbeat. And I think there are other kids that are concerned less about their grade. Not sure why that one is, but I think maybe, again, that's what comes down to, on the one end, you know, the college performance and the college acceptances and things like that. And the notion that, you know, we kind of have a prevailing thought that everybody should go to college. You know, we say college and career ready when we really mean college ready.
College and college ready.
Right, exactly. You know,
and career. We mean college, then career. Right, yeah, not exactly, career. Right, college, yeah. Then career.
You know, that comes down to, there are a lot of jobs that don't require college. And how many times I've talked to you, what are you going to do after graduate? I'm going to go to college. What are you going to college for? I don't know. Then maybe you don't want to go to college, you know, and we do some career research stuff in here that I wish we could do more with, but we don't have the time because we have other curriculum we have to cover. But they'll look through that, and some, it's really an interesting little thing that we go through, and they go, oh, okay, so this is a really interesting career, or they think they know what they want to do, and they look and they go, oh, I don't need a college degree for that. Like, I only need an AA degree. And they had no idea what education they really needed for what they wanted to do. They are geared so much to going to college, as opposed to really trying to figure out what it is they want to do and then pursuing that and figuring out how to get that. But again, that comes back to the, you know, if we can do more online learning and offer a more variety of classes and stuff like that. You know, I mean, I always say, if you asked me originally what I like teaching, is it's my favorite thing. If I couldn't be a teacher, right, there's a few things I would do. And one of them just thought of was, I'd like to be a meteorologist. I love to track weather patterns. I watch the Weather Channel. I track hurricanes when they're coming. I'm a nerd like that. But what if we had a meteorology class? And schools can't offer a meteorology class at every school, but if they can offer them online and kids can, just the vastness of all the things that we can offer these kids are so much better with online classes. So
I like that. You know, in our state and our county both, there's a prevalence of online learning. You know,
right.
In our county, it's actually now a graduation requirement. Mm-hmm. You have to take at least one online course, and which comes with all of its own problems.
Yes.
It's not a perfect system by any stretch. However, it is something. We have all these online classes, but they're not specialized classes.
No, exactly. They're the same classes you can take here. Exactly.
Like, you're not actually
right.
Getting the advantages of it. And I think that's interesting. I haven't really thought of it that way, in the sense of like how much of a personalized experience you could give a kid while they're still in school and while they have the chance to try new things and learn new things. And I think that's the same problem I run into as we slowly eliminate electives and we don't have the funding because we need courses and we need things that add to our school grades and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And that's the problem, is like we keep eliminating these things. And to me, high school, middle school, elementary school are the time where you're supposed to try everything.
Right.
And you can't do that when you're taking two reading classes and two math classes a day.
Right.
And we have to pay for a reading teacher because the testing scores aren't high enough. So we got to give them extra time with testing for reading. And
the requirements. They require to take three sciences. Well, if you're not going to be a scientist, maybe you should only take one. More electives. We have to offer more variety electives, but then have more room in their schedule for electives.
But I feel like in order to do that, I think the problem starts so much earlier than high school in that sense. We don't expose them to much of anything already in middle school.
Right.
So the sciences are so backburnered in middle school that they don't get exposed to chemistry really. So they don't know if they like chemistry.
Right.
Maybe
True.
They don't like biology and they really cannot stand earth sciences.
Right.
But they actually love chemistry.
Yeah.
They don't know that until they take it. So yeah, I mean, I guess maybe on some level that's a teacher problem where they didn't instill a love of science. But I don't know. I just think we need exposure. And that's where my problem with, if you're not good at math, don't take math. You have to have that exposure, which depends on elementary and middle school to get that exposure until they get to high school and have those choices. They're just as pressed for standards and meeting curriculum requirements as we are.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know where the line or the solution is. I guess like all things, and I always say this, is it's it's not about throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Sure.
It's about finding the balance.
Right.
And all things are necessary. And even going back to what is the goal of education, maybe we do need all those goals, but we at least need to rank them. We at least need to know which one's most important and which right. one's second and which one's third.
Right. And at the same time, you know, you say throw the baby out with the bathwater is a good analogy, because none of this has to be done overnight with one fell swoop of the pen. It can be done incrementally. We can go, okay, let's back off on some of the requirements for the kids and offer some more online classes. It doesn't have to be a monumental sweep. Same thing with curriculum stuff. You know, you can loosen the standards. You can loosen the testing standards. You can say, instead of we're going to test you on all of this, we're going to test you on this little smaller amount. And then the other stuff, you can elaborate on what you thought needed to be done more in your class, or what you're an expert at, or what you think you can motivate and make your kids really engaged in. You know, so you can scale the things back and still accomplish some of these things without just kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak.
Yeah. I think on some level there is control, at least where we're at. There is an ability for a teacher to try some of that. I think what we run into a lot is this risk concept, is this risk-reward concept, where it's like, I want to try new things. I want to do different things in my classroom, but I can't because of standards, and I ultimately have a test score that determines my pay.
Right.
But I think, at least in my experience, because I just got to the point when I was in a standard classroom where I was just so frustrated with all of it that I said, you know what? Toss it all out. I'm done. I don't care. I'm not going to play the game anymore. I refuse. I'm taking my ball and going home.
Right.
And I did that in my class. I tossed out grading. I tossed out standards. Right. I tossed out everything. And we just learned stuff.
Right.
And we learned whatever my kids were interested in, whatever I was interested in. And I did this in seventh grade, and I did it in ninth grade as well when I taught both, where I was not content-centered, and I was not driven by that. I was driven by cool pieces of reading.
Right.
And I was like, let's just pick this and talk about it. Like, let's just read this thing and answer some questions and talk about it. That's and beautiful. Yes, it was all fun. It was, you know, it was fun, but it was also important Absolutely. Questions, and they were rigorous questions and pushing the kids and stuff. Well, I hate that word. I just used rigorous. Ugh, I hate that word.
I kind of threw up in my mouth a little too.
Yeah, so. It's okay. And yet, every time I do this, every time I've done that, my test score still did great.
Right.
Like, I still had, you know, high test scores. And right. maybe there needs to be a contingent of teachers who are willing to say, not just buck the system, because we definitely have right. enough teachers that want to buck the system and are willing to do it.
There's two different ways to buck the system,
maybe
though. There's the positive and the negative
buck
way.
Buck the system for the good of kids.
Right.
Where, and I think that's maybe the part we miss so often. If everything you're doing is good for kids, all the rest of it will work itself out, I feel like.
Yeah, you hope. I would be nervous. You know, like if I spent extra time on, you know, the investment part that the kids would have loved and really got into mutual funds and things like that and how to do the investing and stuff like that. If I spent more time on that, I'm going to sacrifice other curriculum. And knowing that that's on the test, I guess I just don't have the guts to do that. That scares me.
It comes down to that balance, is what are you willing to sacrifice or what are you willing to gain? And I don't know. I've always... In my classroom, I was willing to burn my personal VAM scores to right. the ground to right. make sure my kids learned and right. did what they needed to do. And English is even harder because their state test is a graduation requirement.
Right.
So it's hard to do that. Yeah. But at the same time, I trusted in my kids that they had the understanding of the general content, that maybe I didn't teach them a specific piece, but they'd be able to reason and logic their way through
right.
the pieces they were maybe a little bit lacking
right. on. But see, when you talk about the reward, the risk reward, your reward, like most teachers, not all, but most teachers are rewarded intrinsically, that they do this because they want to, because they love to teach. They love to teach kids. They're passionate about that. And that's the reward. That, again, is not quantifiable. Can't measure that one. And if I'm faced between that reward and the reward of my principal telling me, great job, you had great test scores and stuff like that, you know, that's taking... Congratulations, you got big guts to be able to say, I'm gonna take the high road on that. That's hard.
I mean, I'm certainly not perfect. I did it.
But you're close.
I did it incremental steps. Yeah. Thanks, Jay. I know you don't mean that, but thanks anyways. I appreciate it. You know, and it's incremental steps. It's not
right.
a full-on toss out. It's
right.
2 weeks out of a quarter toss out.
Right.
It's an overarching project that 20% of our class time is spent on that doesn't meet those requirements.
Right.
And it's like you said, it's that small incremental change.
Right.
And you know, so much of we talk about paradigm shifting and technology change in education, and a lot of those things we almost want people to just dive in full
right.
force. And we need some to do that because we need some people to pave the way. Like, we need people that are going to dive in full force and get burned
right.
when I take their platforms away year after year after year.
Right.
Not I personally, you know that.
But right.
I mean,
yeah.
you know what I mean? The thing you love and are obsessed with is gone, and
yeah.
now you try some new thing, and now that's great, and now it's gone, and then you try some new thing, and now it's gone.
Right.
And we need people to do that. But I think for the majority of teachers, it needs to be an incremental. It's a, okay, try one thing.
Right.
Just 1 week out of the quarter, try this.
Right.
And next quarter, 2 weeks out of the quarter. Yeah. And the next one, stick with two because that didn't go great. And you don't have to – this doesn't have to be this perfect chart of growth.
No, you're right.
It just needs to reach where you're doing what you think is good for kids within the confines of your own limitations.
Right.
And I'm sure there's an economic principle that's similar to that, but that's not – I don't math good. So,
but you word good.
I don't number good, so but I word good.
You know, originally you said that – I had said a long time ago, you know, everybody says education's broken. And I say, what's broken about it? I think kids get a very good education in our school and the other schools that I've been at. They tend to learn a lot and leave better than they came in. I read an article in a paper about a school in Central Florida that has continually gotten F grades. I know that school. I know the former principal at that school. And there's another school that's an inner city school that gets bad grades from the state. And I know what they do at those schools. And it's amazing the amount of effort. They have buses that bring the kids in on Saturdays and take them home. And I mean, they do a tremendous amount with resources and everything that they can do. They just, for whatever reasons we could start a whole nother podcast on, is they don't get the school grade. They're still stuck with the F or the D. And then we say this, and this one drives me nuts, is when they go, it's an F school. The schools are failing. The schools are broken. They're not. Students are getting a very, very good education. Can we improve it? Sure, absolutely. There's nothing they can't improve. But we send this image that it's broken and we need to get in there and roll our sleeves up and tear everything apart and redesign it and fix it. And you can do that. And I think you can make improvements, but I think we're doing it from a desperation point as opposed to looking forward and going, what will be better in the future?
I guess this whole episode has really been about quantifying or qualifying. What is, can we subjectively or objectively measure people? It's kind of, we keep coming back to that same topic, right?
I know. And we don't have an answer.
And we don't have an answer. We don't have an answer. This podcast is going to be a failure.
For all your listeners, they've listened for how long we've been going now?
We're like at 52 minutes of raw audio.
And they're no better.
But I've got to cut out half of what you said. So.
Exactly.
So
now we're down to 12.
We have 12 minutes of usable audio.
9 of it was you. So.
I almost think that's a good place to wrap it up.
Okay.
We need to be looking at going to the future,
right?
Not necessarily just saying they're an F school.
Right.
I like that. That's a sort of a for having started sort of negatively, I think that's like a positive ending. I like it.
Yeah.
So I'm good with it. Hey, Jay, thanks for sitting with me. I appreciate you talking to me here on my inaugural episode of this podcast with the bell ringing.
That's the end of my planning period. I got to go to work now.
We got to go work. It right. Could not be any better.
Thanks for having me on, Brad.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks, Jay. And that was it, the first episode of the Planning Period podcast. I would like to thank Jay for spending his time with me during his planning period to talk about educational issues and what he thinks is affecting what we do right now. And special thanks to Kevin McLeod for our intro and closing music at incompetech.com. His music is awesome. You should check him out. This piece is vicious. I enjoy it, mostly because the description of the piece included a comment about that one social studies teacher who does that one fun assignment at the beginning of the year, just to make you hope you do more later. Still, thank you to him. And thank you all for listening. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed my interview with Jay, and I'll be back soon with my second episode, in which I will be talking to the wonderful and talented Kristen Iannuzzi. I'll see you all then.